From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. In a race that no one wants to win, Philadelphia is leading the pack.
More than 1,100 people overdosed from opioids last year in Philadelphia.
This is WHYY health reporter Nina Feldman.
That's down from the year before, but just barely. And it's still the highest rate of opioid overdoses in any major city in America.
Philadelphia is taking steps to deal with the problem.
It's increased access to naloxone, the overdose reversal drug, and it's announced its support for a supervised injection facility, despite federal pushback.
But there's another option for those in addiction. It's called medication-assisted treatment, or MAT.
And it involves one of three drugs, methadone, buprenorphine, and Vivitrol, combined with talk therapy, essentially.
One of those three drugs, called buprenorphine, or its brand name Suboxone, is becoming increasingly popular for treatment. And the city is pushing for it, too.
They've launched a big ad campaign so people know that buprenorphine is available and that it works.
So why can buprenorphine be so difficult to get? Today on The Why, getting on board with Bup. Nina, methadone's been around for a while, and it might be something people are a little more familiar with. But recently there's been a bigger emphasis on buprenorphine, or Suboxone. What's the difference?
Methadone has been around for a long time. You go to a clinic every single day and you get dosed with methadone. Suboxone is similar, but you can take it on your own, which makes it a lot more convenient for a lot of people. Methadone and Suboxone are similar in that they are both low-grade opioids. They're accessing the opioid receptors in your brain the same way that a prescription opioid would or an illicit opioid like heroin or fentanyl would. But they're doing it in a less dramatic way. So you're not having the same euphoric effects that you would with one of those stronger opioids. And you're also not having those sort of debilitating effects that keep you from living a functional life. So they kind of work as management for opioid addiction, if that makes sense.
Okay. So how do people access Suboxone?
So it could be at a doctor's office. It could be at an addiction treatment center or clinic. And more recently, certain nonprofits in Philadelphia, like Prevention Point, have made an effort to get doctors into the community on the street and be writing prescriptions for Suboxone right there in the Kensington neighborhood where there are a lot of people who are suffering from opioid addiction. So they actually started a mobile unit. It's a bus. Mm. They call it the Bup bus.
I like and, that, the Bup bus.
Yeah. Yeah. And they park right at the corner of Kensington and Allegheny, and people line up every afternoon to see the doctor inside and get a prescription for buprenorphine if that's a good fit for them.
And so you talked to somebody who was on the Bup bus and was there to get this treatment.
Yeah, I talked to Luis Morano. He's 29. The day I talked to him, he had just gotten out of detox a few days before, had a little bit of money on him.
I ended up leaving after detox and just getting high. And
pretty much, it sounded like to me, immediately regretted that and wanted to be able to go home, but knew he couldn't if his family knew that he had left detox and gone unused. So his plan was to go get on buprenorphine treatment, be able to sort of stabilize, and then head back home.
My plan is to go be on some kind of program like this and show that, like, I don't want to do this anymore. I can't do this anymore, and I need something to do it.
And so did he get Suboxone?
Yep. He really graciously let me sit in while he talked to the doctor.
All right, give me just a second while I bring your chart up here.
And the two of them chatted for a while about Lewis's history and what treatment might look like for him. And Lewis got pretty emotional during that conversation.
And, you know, this medication is going to take care of this little tiny piece of what's going on. But you're on the road right now that's going to put you in a better place. And you've got access right now to whatever kind of treatment you need that would support you.
So then the doctor called in the prescription.
Hi there, it's Ben from the MAT van. I've got a script to call in. The script is for buprenorphine naloxone 8 2 milligram tablets. One tab, twice daily, sublingually dispense.
So it sounds like this was pretty easy for Lewis to access. I mean, was his experience typical?
I think Lewis's experience is sort of a best case scenario. And unfortunately, there are a lot of obstacles to accessing Suboxone pretty much at every step of the way. For a long time in the AA community and in a lot of the recovery houses where people, you know, go after they get out of rehab, Suboxone and methadone and, you know, medication-assisted treatment, because they are technically low-grade opioids, were thought of as essentially just replacing one drug with another, replacing one addiction with another, and were pretty stigmatized and thought of as cheating or cutting corners or not actually being quote-unquote clean or sober. That was an attitude that I think permeated among people in recovery and people who were in active addiction, too, in this sense of, well, I'm not even going to try that because it wouldn't count. So that's a really big obstacle for getting people to feel comfortable asking for help, even if the treatment's there.
Have doctors been resistant to Suboxone in the same way that the recovery community has?
In some ways, yes. So in order for doctors to prescribe Suboxone, they have to apply for a specific kind of waiver. The process to get the waiver isn't super cumbersome, but it does take time. It's adding a whole new disease to their slate of treatment that they're offering, and that's asking a lot of physicians who are super busy. On top of that, the waivers allow a doctor to treat only so many patients.
Oh, there's like a limit on that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So in their first year, I think it's 30, and then they increase later on. But if that doctor is in a very high needs area, that might not.
They might max out pretty quickly.
Exactly. Actually, a really good example of where the waiver limit comes into play is at the Philadelphia jail. Normally, they have the right amount of doctors to treat the right amount of patients that have opioid use disorder with Suboxone. But recently, they had a staffing issue. One of their doctors left, and they were really left scrambling to find doctors who could prescribe buprenorphine to their inmates. Bruce Herdman is the medical director at the jail, and he said that really put them in a bind.
We're not able to enroll everyone that we want to enroll because of the waiver limit. That's just the reality. It's unfortunate.
And what about when patients actually go to get the prescriptions filled?
Yeah, so there are a whole other slate of obstacles at the pharmacy. One thing, as I was reporting the story, that I think I came to realize is that, you know, I go to the pharmacy and I get my prescription filled, and I don't really know what's happening behind the scenes when my doctor calls in the prescription, but I sort of imagine there's like some magical and highly functioning communication process between my doctor and the pharmacist that's just like happening, and they're all taking care of it back there.
Sure.
And you know,
that's what I assume too.
Well, it always seems to like kind of work out for
yeah,
me, you know,
more or less.
But what I've really realized in reporting this story is like these are entirely distinct operations that are happening in silos that are totally fragmented segments of the healthcare system. So you've got a doctor who might have one idea about what opioid addiction treatment means for a patient, and that might mean staying on Suboxone for as long as that patient needs. And then you might have a pharmacist who thinks, well, actually, this is something that a patient should be tapering off of slowly. And if the doctor isn't prescribing it that way, maybe that means this patient is too dependent. Again, going back to that stigma and that idea that Suboxone is actually a low-grade opioid, and a pharmacist being afraid that they're sort of pushing a patient into some other sort of dependency or addiction. I talked to Jimmy Liu. He's a pharmacist in Kensington, and he said that puts a lot of pressure on pharmacists.
The pharmacists seem to become the police, kind of like gatekeepers. We're the ones who are deciding whether or not these patients are getting their prescriptions or not.
Okay, so what else are pharmacists concerned about?
So one big concern for pharmacists is what in the industry people call diversion, which is basically just using a drug in a way it's not intended. In the case of Suboxone, there is a high resale value for it. It's sold on the street often. It does stave off the symptoms of withdrawal. You know, that can be a really helpful thing for somebody who's in active addiction. So pharmacists are concerned that if somebody is using a drug in a way that it's not prescribed, they could get in trouble. Their license would be on the line. And if they see, you know, characteristics or behavior of somebody that they consider to be suspicious, well, then they might not prescribe the drug to that person. And I talked to some pharmacists who told me that they do that. Wholesalers put a limit on the total percent of controlled substances they can have as a proportion of their entire drug stock at any given time. So you can have X percent of your stock be opioids.
Okay, like no more than 30% or something.
Yeah, I think it's a lot less than that. Yeah. But yeah, exactly. And so if you're in a really high needs area like Kensington, if you're going to meet the needs of the patient population that's coming in and needs Suboxone on a daily or a weekly or a monthly basis, and you can only order so much at a time as determined by your wholesaler, you run the risk of running out.
We pretty much tell the patients that we're out of stock.
You can apply for an exemption from your wholesaler if you want to be able to stock more. But if you apply for that exemption, you're under higher scrutiny from the wholesaler, who's then being watched by the DEA.
They basically come down with a fine-tooth comb.
And the wholesaler, if they feel like you're, you know, running some sort of pill mill, or if they feel like you are operating in some sort of shady way as a pharmacy, they can kind of at any time for any reason just decide they don't want to keep distributing to you. So that's
kind of a stigma associated with, you know, going for that exemption also.
Yeah, it's almost a catch-22 because on the one hand, you want to provide more for your patients, and on the other hand, you're essentially asking for higher regulation, which nobody likes.
Yeah, so we would prefer to stay under the radar, basically.
So are insurance companies willing to pay for Suboxone?
They are, but not without sort of one additional step in the prescription filling process, which is called prior authorization. So what that means is that doctors have to send a note to insurance companies who have to then verify with the pharmacists to say, yes, for sure, this is okay for this patient to get this medication. And that's common. There are lots of drugs that require prior authorization, but it just takes a while. It takes a day or three to get that sort of additional okay through the hoops.
And if somebody's going through withdrawal symptoms, like that could be a really long time.
Yeah, I think actually all of these obstacles, what it comes down to is the urgency that a patient who needs Suboxone is feeling. So usually they're being prescribed this drug to stave off withdrawal, and it's going to be really anxiety provoking if somebody tells you, okay, you actually have to wait 3 days for this. The risk is that instead of waiting 3 days and undergoing what are really, really unpleasant withdrawal symptoms, is that somebody would just go and buy illicit drugs, which are a lot easier to get and are immediately available. So the sort of immediacy of having Suboxone available, that could make sort of all the difference about whether somebody starts on a path to recovery or not in a case like this.
Thank you, Nina.
Thanks so much for having me.
The Why is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with Annette John Hall and Alex Stern, with editorial direction from Katie Culinary. Our engineers are Mike Villers, Diana Martinez, Al Banks, and Adam Stanishevsky. WHYY's news director is Eugene San. Sandra Clark is Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue, and John Mussoni is Assistant Vice President of News Operations. Tweet us at Shai Ben-Yaakov or at AnnetteJH. Thanks for listening. We'll be back Monday.